are listening to KBOO Portland.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say.
Good evening, you're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Portland. Before we start our show, I want to remind you that today's a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for Transpositive and for KBOO by becoming a member of KBOO today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $15,000 goal. We're community funded, so we need your support to get there. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thank you.
Good evening and welcome to Transpositive. Tonight we're going to be discussing abuse, sexual assault, and domestic violence from a trans perspective. So we would like to give a trigger warning at this time that this content will be dealing with some very triggering and upsetting topics. If you are not in a headspace where you will be able to handle such content matter, this would be a good time to tune out. But otherwise, feel free to keep listening. Why don't we go around and introduce ourselves?
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host here on Transpositive, and I use she and her pronouns.
And I'm Nicolette. I use AM or they, them pronouns. I'm also a co-host.
My name is Carter, and I use they, them pronouns, and I am also a co-host.
My name is Marcy Grace, she, her, hers, and I'm also a co-host.
And then today we also have with us Dan and Bats.
Oh, thank you. Hi, I'm Shannon, and I use she, her pronouns.
So how should we get started? Do we maybe want to just go around and share a little bit about our individual experiences with abuse and assault?
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah. From what I understand, a lot of us here are survivors. I myself have survived quite a lot in my life. I grew up being physically and emotionally abused by my parents, and I was also sexually assaulted as a child, though I've largely repressed that memory. And I've also been sexually assaulted as an adult by two different people, and I can talk more about that later. Would anyone else like to summarize what they're here to talk about?
Yeah, so I'm 20. I turned 21 in June, so it's almost my birthday. And I have survived multiple sexual assaults growing up. And then closer to now, I've also survived a few closer to the age I am now. And I really wanted to talk about this topic because I know that there's many out there that have survived as homeless and disabled people. And it's sad and awful what we have gone through.
Yeah, I think it is very important to discuss this topic from a trans perspective as well, because a lot of queer and trans people do go through abuse and assault, and I don't think it gets talked about enough.
So I have been emotionally, mentally, and physically abused by my family as well, my parents, my siblings. My biggest physical abuser was my brother, who's about 3 years older than me, and that continued until he left the home. And then I have also been raped. I was raped 3 months after my bottom surgery here in town by somebody. And I've also been sexually assaulted by other family members, being groped to see if certain body parts were real or weren't real.
Statistics documenting transgender people's experience of sexual violence indicate shockingly high levels of sexual assault. 1 in 2 transgender individuals are sexually abused or assaulted at some point in their lives. And some reports estimate that transgender survivors' experiences of sexual assault may be up to 66%. This indicates that the majority of transgender people are living with the aftermath of trauma and the fear of possible repeat victimization. So we're talking tonight about this issue because it was suggested by Carter, and this is not going to be an easy conversation, but we're very happy to have with us Shannon Batts, a therapist who we can kind of turn to if we get into a spot that's kind of emotionally sticky. Shannon, would you like to talk a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, thanks, Emma. So I am a licensed therapist here living in Portland, Oregon, but I am also licensed in California. And for the last 6 years have a unique support for spouses who have partners who are transitioning their gender, and then also done couples groups from the same batch of folks, as well as couples seek me out because of this sort of a subspecialty. Marriage and relationships have been my superpowers in the past in repairing and strengthening those. And so, so that's been for decades now my work, and this support system locally and now statewide because of the pandemic and Zoom and across 2 states is in the spouse's support. And that just came by way of someone seeking help and couldn't find the resources. They didn't exist yet. So that's why I created that. Personally, I came from a very violent home with abuse and nobody coming to anyone's aid. So probably is no surprise I studied to become a therapist. But anyway, I'm here to support you all. And so I'm not going to center my story, you know, or really try to process that here. I feel like that's not the work of my being here for you in Transpositive.
Oh, thank you, Shannon. You have shared that story with me before, and I would welcome your sharing of your story if you feel moved to do so. I feel like your story is very much intersecting with other stories that people have to share tonight, and it may be helpful people to hear it. But I'll leave that up to you.
Okay. Well, if you think it's helpful, I'm gonna take your lead.
Please.
Let's see. I think I've characterized this as like an intergenerational addiction and abuse that has come down the family tree. My mother in particular brought her trauma. I mean, what else could she do, right? She brought her trauma into the family as someone who'd been molested and multiple times. And then she had a series of relationships with alcohol and addicted and violent men. And so I really saw, I experienced intense fear and grief and all sorts of powerlessness as a child, all through until I left for college. My mom is actually quite a brave and courageous woman that did get sober in her 60s, and I think just was near death multiple times from the beatings that she got and multiple suicide attempts. I've been there to revive her as a kid and things like that. So the only way I really could break the trauma in my family, the patterns, you know, the generational inheritance that was happening, was to to get a lot of therapy, to place myself into support circles over and over again until I could get my legs under me, and then also to really commit to that shift of like the buck stops here moment. Like, okay, there can't be addiction on my level, like my generation. I'm just gonna have to never use or drink ever. I cannot be trusted. So I think that was how the addiction stopped. But then, I mean, in the family, but really, I was joking with my mother now, and she feels terribly guilty and sad for all of the things that happened to us. And I say, well, nothing a few years of cheap therapy can't help with. But anyway, I dealt with my story over time. It took years. And what's unique here is that your stories are layered with all this intersectionality and complications that we know from the research and, you know, people working with trans folks who've been through intimate partner violence and other kinds of abuse, that it's very much layered in how people treat you just for being trans and the coming out and all of that. So I think that's what you're saying already.
Thank you.
Anyway, that's more than enough about me. But yeah, you could talk to me off show or whenever you want. I'm happy to talk to people.
Thank you so much for sharing that. In 2000, so there was a study done by the, let's see, who is this? By the National Office of Victims of Crime. And they reported that 50% of the people who died in violent hate crimes against gay, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people were transgender women. And I find that really interesting that hate crimes of that magnitude happen so overwhelmingly against transgender people. Sexual assault perpetrated against transgender individuals may be a component of an anti-transgender hate crime, or may be linked to other variables such as race. And I think that kind of goes in line with what you were saying, Shannon, about the intersectionality of sexual assault, domestic violence, and abuse of transgender people. Acts of hate violence such as harassment, stalking, physical and sexual assault are often supported by socially sanctioned expressions of transphobia, biphobia, or homophobia, and they're intended to send a message to LGBTQ communities. Many people also face bias because they belong to other marginalized groups along the axis of race, class, incarceration history, immigration status, and ability. So tonight we're talking about sexual assault, domestic violence and abuse in the transgender non-binary community. So far we've had a chance to hear from all of our hosts and also from our guest therapist, Shannon. And Nicolette, where would we like to go now with the conversation?
I guess if we want, we could start talking a little more in depth about our experiences, how they've affected us, and if there's any intersection we believe to be, you know, with our trans identity, our queer identity, whatever our identities may be, if there's any intersection between that and the violence we've experienced, now would be a good time to talk about it.
Well, let's get started with that. If we could maybe go not more than about 10 minutes for each person, but like feel free to really kind of go into depth with your story. This is a good place to do it. Would you like to start, Nicolette?
Sure. So like I was talking about earlier, sorry, my cat is very vocal about this apparently. So I grew up with two parents who were physically and emotionally abusive. They were what I would consider narcissistic abusers. Narcissistic abuse is basically a type of abuse where a parent will take out their emotions on a child in order to prop themselves up and make them feel better about themselves. They'll use their child as a scapegoat. And I was the scapegoat of my family. You know, my siblings weren't treated nearly the same way, but I was the child that was kind of singled out to be the target. And then I have a vague memory of being sexually assaulted as a very young child, somewhere between 2 and 4 years old. But, you know, I barely remember it, and I've blocked out so much of it that I don't even remember who did it. But as an adult, I'm 31 now, but when I was in my 20s, I had a few years where I dated a partner who ended up sexually abusing me. And that's, you know, I think a huge misconception I should address, that, you know, so many people believe you can't sexually assault your partner, you know, someone you're in a long-term relationship with, but you absolutely can. You know, I was forced to have sex when I did not want it and did not consent to it by my partner that I'd been with for a few years. And I, shortly after that, went through another sexual assault, this time with a hookup, but this was another misconception that many people have, that you can't withdraw consent after giving it, but you absolutely can, and it is sexual assault if someone continues to. I, during sex, withdrew consent, but he continued to force sex with me anyway. That is still sexual assault. So that's part of what I was hoping to address during this discussion, is that there's a lot of misconceptions that people have about abuse and about sexual assault, and this would be a good time to talk about them. As to whether there was any intersection with my trans identity, that's kind of hard to say. I know my parents were abusive because I didn't measure up to their standards, and that may have had to do with my queer and trans identity and not, you know, being this perfect feminine person that they expected me to be. I don't know for sure, but that may have been part of it. As for my assaults later in life, my partner who sexually assaulted me was also trans and had also been through a lot of abuse, so maybe that's why they projected that abuse onto me. I don't know. But that is a possible explanation. And, you know, both of these people that assaulted me may have just seen me as vulnerable. So that's kind of a more in-depth explanation of my experience, and I can talk more about it later if we need to. But I would like to, at this point, hand it off to the next person who would like to share.
Carter, would you like to share more in depth some of your story?
Yeah, my internet was unstable. Am I back?
Yeah, we've got to.
Okay. So for me, growing up, I was sexually abused for a couple of years. And then after that, a few years after that, I decided to join a specific church. And that church had held it over me that I was only transgender because I was abused when I was young. In which they had forced prayer on me, and had forced many other things on me that I don't really want to get into that topic as much. But because of that, I had met some really amazing people in my life who were like, that stuff was wrong and you're an amazing person. I don't think that because those people like did something wrong that you're not an amazing person. You are an amazing person. And I had met so many amazing friends. However, there was one person who ended up sexually assaulting me in high school. And it was right before my 16th birthday. And he had driven me, I grew up in a small town, he had driven me somewhere and had sexually assaulted me. And then in high school, into my senior year, because I graduated a year early, into my senior year, I had reported that assault, which was about 3 months later. And I was bullied for reporting that assault. And many people started using slurs, and I didn't want to go to school anymore because I was bullied. And then a detective had came to my school one day and started asking me questions. But once I told him that I was non-binary and that my pronouns were they, them, he kind of just like started to like shut down questions and was just like, okay, we're kind of done. Like, you know, this is maybe you just misinterpreted what had happened. And I was like, no, I want to continue talking about this because this isn't okay. Like, I want more resources. If you're not going to talk about this, I want to talk about this with someone else. In which he wouldn't let me. Later, in the school year, graduated, and I did, I graduated at 16, in which I feel very proud of doing. That is one of my most proudest moments. But a month after that, I had filed for a restraining order, and I had ended up losing that restraining order. It got dropped because, and what the judge said was that the other person had just turned 18 and still had his whole life ahead of him. Which I was told could probably happen. When I was talking with my lawyer was an amazing lawyer, and so I had knew that that was something that could possibly happen, which that made me feel horrible. It felt like I was worthless, and it felt very scary. I felt that he would still come after me now that the restraining order was dropped. He had came up and threatened a family member of mine, but after that, I didn't hear from him again. I haven't heard from him again. But in 2019, I was in a relationship with someone, and I was living in a transitional housing program here in Portland, in which I was dating someone else in the program, and they were 25, and I was 17. I hadn't turned 18 yet, and they had sexually assaulted me, but they didn't just sexually assault me. Just like when I was conscious, I was unconscious, having seizures when they were assaulting me. And they had done this twice that I know of, because two of my friends had witnessed them assaulting me and had done nothing, other than say later that they didn't want to tell me because they wanted me to forget it had happened. And then a third time they had assaulted me while I was conscious, but it was after a seizure, as the person was supposed to like bring me up to my room and put me to bed, help me get back to my room. And so that I was supposed to be fine. They did other violent stuff. They threw chairs at me. They threw hairbrushes and plates. They were very loud and destructive, but I just wanted to like find the good in the person. And it wasn't until the third time that I had told the program that I was living in that they had assaulted me and that I wanted to like file a report. And they said that they had to file a DHS report, but they didn't have to file a police report. And I said, well, I want to file a police report. So I had to call non-emergency, and the person who came to take my report, they had done the report fairly good-ish. They respected my pronouns, but had told me I should probably get a restraining order. I contacted the same lawyer that I had, and we filed for a restraining order, in which that one had gotten dropped because that one, there wasn't, quote, enough evidence. And so when I was younger, I don't think that there was much intersection with that, but with me being trans, but all of the abuse after that, there was an intersection with me being trans and also being disabled and not being able to really protect myself. And I definitely face fear now, even leaving my apartment. I have a very bad panic disorder, in which it's very hard for me to even open my apartment door. I get very scared leaving my apartment. I have a German Shepherd to hopefully scare people off so that if someone were to come through my door, they wouldn't harm me. And for when I am out, even though she is training to be a service dog and can't have aggressive values, I just hope enough that people won't come near me. And if they do come near me, I have a vest on my dog that says "Dad carries pepper spray."
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing those. Hi, this is Emma from Transpositive. We're just taking a little break in the show today to remind you that KBOO is a great radio station, and 80% of our funding comes from our members. We're 52 years old, and we're one of the oldest community radio stations in the country. KBOO is a real gem, and if you'd like to give to KBOO, just go to kboo.fm/give. We're community funded, so we need your help to get there. If you can, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thanks so much.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the US.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your coworkers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Marcy, would you like to share your story more in depth?
So I believe the earliest memories I was having was the abuse of my dad, and he used to beat all of us with the belt. My brother and I used to get it quite a bit just because we were arguing, right? And as Nicolette was speaking on earlier, the narcissistic behavior, I feel like both my parents were narcissistic. I believe that this is generational abuse. It's what their parents did to them and their parents did to them and so on and so forth. And so, you know, I don't believe that the abuse I suffered at the hands of my dad was particularly because I was trans or my trans identity. I believe that was just what he was taught and how to discipline children. I do believe, though, that the abuse I suffered by my brother was partially because of my trans identity and also partially because of the abuse that we suffered at the hands of my dad. My dad would always go after him first. He would get the worst of it. And then I would get the less of it. And I believe that that brought up a lot of resentment by my brother towards me. And then also the abuse that I suffered from him felt a lot like conversion therapy. He constantly would hit on me and punch on me and tell me it was love taps. He would try to get me to change my voice and deepen my voice, try to get me to move differently, not be so feminine. You know, I was made fun of how I would throw things or whatever. So I suffered that abuse by him until he left. I believe he was about 15. I was 12, 13-ish, I guess, when he left the home. So, and then, you know, I suffered abuse throughout the years through other people. And then throughout my transition, I suffered sexual abuse that I had never really experienced or was expecting. One of my siblings
decided to grab one of my breasts to see if they were real at a baby shower that we were at, my niece's baby shower. And it was done in front of a crowd of people. I mean, it wasn't like in private or, you know, it was very embarrassing. And so that was one of the first experiences of sexual assault that I experienced as an adult. And then a few years later, after my bottom surgery, it was about 3 months after my bottom surgery, it was New Year's Eve of 2018-19. And my cousin had invited me out to the bar downtown. And so I went out with her and some of her friends. Some of her friends she's known for 15 to 30 years, so they knew who this person was. I did not know this person. This person was a stranger to me that night. And so we proceeded to have fun and get drunk. I felt I was safe. I felt I was with my cousin and my niece. But somewhere along the evening, I became extremely intoxicated, far more than I had expected or had ever experienced. I don't know if I was drugged. I do know that they were offering me Molly that evening, which I turned down several times. So I have no idea if something had been slipped at some point. I got to the point where I had to lay down. I could not keep my eyes open. I was so dizzy and ready to pass out. And there was only one room in the place that we were at. It had a bed and there was somebody laying in there, and it was the guy's girlfriend. And I crawled into bed with her and asked her if I could lay there, and she told me I was okay. And so I went to sleep, and somewhere along the night, I remember somewhat waking up, I guess, to him undressing me, and I had a brace on my knee, and so I could remember the ripping of the Velcro as he took my brace off, and then he took my pants off. He left my underwear on, and he continued to kiss me, and at this point, I felt I was dreaming. I didn't, because it was pitch black, I was not awake. I couldn't speak. I was that intoxicated where I couldn't say no. There was a lot that was going through my mind. Anyway, so he proceeded to get on top of me and try to enter me. And at that point, it had only been 3 months since my bottom surgery, and he couldn't enter me. And so he flipped me over and tried to enter me from the rear. And at that point, his girlfriend woke up and got him off of me. And I just wanted to go back to sleep. I was not in the right frame of mind, consciousness, or being sober at any way. I started getting nauseous. I had a throw up. I ran to the bathroom in only my underwear and my shirt. And that was embarrassing for me. I could remember feeling that. And so I went and I vomited. I made it back to the bed, and I don't know why I went back to the bed. I couldn't stay awake. I needed to go back to sleep. And I feel like she was still in the bed. He was still there. I didn't know where my clothes were. I didn't know where anything was. He started climbing on me again and hugging on me, and she started hitting him and telling him to get off of me, and then she started shaking me and trying to get me to get up, and I was barely able to get up, and I stumbled back into the bathroom, and at that point my cousin came in and asked me what was going on, and I told her I couldn't find my clothes, I needed my clothes. I didn't go into detail of anything that was going on because I really couldn't comprehend what was happening. So I was able to get my clothes, put those back on. I made it out to the living room, and I tried to lay down because I couldn't get anybody to take me home. It was freezing outside and icy. And again, I had an injured knee. I had blown out my ACL at that point and didn't know it because I hadn't had the scans yet. And as I was laying there trying to sleep, there was another guy that kept looking over at me, and the way he looked at me like I was a piece of meat, and I felt like he was looking at me like he was next, and it scared me. And so I somehow was able to get my jacket on and gather myself together, and I walked home. And I didn't have my phone. My phone was left there, and I didn't contact or talk to anybody for a week, because there was a lot of trauma that I was trying to experience. I had never experienced the level of trauma that this had put me through, with the self-blame and the guilt and the feeling of the responsibility of my actions for drinking too much. And so it sent me into a year of depression, and it also lit a fire under my butt to be more of an advocate within the community. And that's when I started my support group for the trans community down here in Lincoln County. And I kind of put myself into that and focused on learning about trauma and healing from that, and just trying to make a difference and not let this ruin my life, but help me grow and change and be able to help somebody else in the future.
Thank you. Shannon, this would be a really great time if you have anything that you could offer to help our listeners or any of our guests kind of process what we've just heard. Yeah. Can you help us out with a little bit of insight?
Yes. I hope to. I just thank you for your vulnerability in telling these stories, Marcy, Nicolette, Carter. They're painful stories. There are many people listening who also have those painful stories, and you're sharing, as you know, because you've shared your personal stories before. This is going to be a light to people. You're already creating purpose of what happened to you in shedding that light out there for others. And something I know is when we tell these stories about our pain and we recall all of these details, it's in a way sort of reliving them on some level, and others sort of relive them with us. And the thing that I've learned over the years, and that I'm really working hard at now to grow this part of being a therapist, is really helping people, including myself, to know that I also need to tell the other stories about me, to me, for me, that are the other aspects of who I am and what I've been through. And I think what I heard from Carter was this amazing note at the end about, now I have this German Shepherd and I'm hoping for protection there. And now I have the shirt with this warning. And I think, you know, that is a story about taking action to try to create safety in this insane world that feels unsafe, that is unsafe. And these are powerful parts of your story as well. And when I hear Marcy saying, I went through this horrendous assault and the way I was treated, you know, all this other stuff of assault and disrespect. And then I went and created this coastal community of support so others, which I've heard you say before, Marcy, so that others won't be alone when they're trying to even figure out should they come out or not and when, you know. And so I've sent many folks your way, Marcy, you don't know this, but because of your stories that you told, you've told this kind of your whole coming out story in two episodes of Transpositive, that created the light that shined or shone or however the word goes to others to see a path out of their trauma in reaching out and connecting to you and finding a way. And so that's another important piece, is like, we know the commonality of abuse, like a driving force of abuse is control. And we can't change those events, but those people do not get to control how we define ourselves. And that includes what meaning we're going to make out of it, you know, what we do with our lives, what we head for in the future, how we esteem, you know, how we feel about our value. We do not have to let those events control that. And at the same time, I'm aware that, you know, that that can also be taken in a sort of Pollyanna, like, oh yeah, just believe in yourself kind of stuff. That is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about more like Marcy's path. I'm sure Nicolette and Carter's too, Emma, me, all of us, is deliberate.
Okay,
so the point being intentional driving of our own selves forward instead of it is all just things that happen to us that are hurtful and traumatic, and you know, create this whole identity of survivor. It's like, okay, and there's more. And I'm wondering how, because, you know, we have this room full of amazing people. How is it that you define yourselves now in light of what happened? How do you describe yourselves? What meaning do you make out of that for yourself now and your purpose?
That's a great question, Shannon. And we've got about 5 minutes left in the show. Anyways, that's a great question for the last 5 minutes of our show, if we would like to address that and kind of close it out with our responses.
So for me, what drives myself is I don't have great memory anymore, which can be from a few different things. But the thing that pushes me forward is, now that like I'm disabled, I find that there's a lot of other disabled people that have the same disorders as me, and or people who are just disabled in general, and we just get together and we hang out and we just do fun things. Smirk, I started hosting a like disabled night. So anyone who is disabled and can go to Smirk, can hang out at that group, which has made me so happy to be able to do and to do that. But online, I've also created a safe space on social media, but I've also been in social media groups where, like, I'm not the one hosting the group, but I lift up other people's voices within that group.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Carter. What about you, Nicolette?
So I guess what I would say to that is, you know, I view myself primarily as a fighter, a teacher, and a healer. You know, I've had to fight through a lot in my life, being queer, trans, disabled, and a trauma survivor. And I feel that my purpose is to help other people in ways that I wish I had been helped, or in ways that people have helped me. So that's why I do things like Trans Positive, where I educate people about these kinds of issues. And I am a peer support person. You know, I try to support other people, other trans people, other disabled people, other trauma survivors, people who've been through what I have. You know, I always try and be a supporter and a healer to them. And, you know, I'm also a musician, and I feel that my music can be educating and healing as well. That I hope to inspire and comfort people through my music, and I hope to inspire and comfort people with this show and with everything that I try and put out into the world.
Thank you. And Marcy, would you like to answer that last question?
I was just saying I'm very much in agreement and feel very much like Nicolette had described. I feel that I'm strong and stoic, compassionate and empathetic. I feel my purpose is to be a helper. I've always enjoyed helping people. It's always bring me a great deal of fulfillment and joy within that, you know, and being able to use my privilege within my journey and my transition and where I'm at to create those safe spaces for people to come together and share their stories and come to me and talk to me. You know, it makes me feel good, and I know that I'm able to fulfill a need within the community that not many people can fill.
Thank you. So we've been talking tonight with Nicolette Schweitzer, Carter Lee, and Marcy Grace about sexual assault, domestic violence and abuse in the transgender and non-binary community. My name is Emma Lugo, and I'm a co-host of Transpositive. And we've also been joined tonight by Shannon Batts from the Relationship Garden. Shannon, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and about your therapy service?
Okay, well, I mentioned something at the top, but I'll just say you can find me at relationshipgardening.com. You can also find me at spousesresourcecenter.com. It's the same location, but it's just me not understanding how internet works. I have both of the addresses going to the same place. And yeah, so my work's primarily in anti-racism facilitation and consultation at racetalkspdx.com, I think, and also as a private practice therapist for California and Oregon. And I do also some gender letters pro bono, and that's for, you know, gender assessments for letters needed for surgery and hormones and things like that.
So anyway, thank you for having me here. And I'm just, my heart is full of the beauty of these leaders in the room. Leaders of healing, really.
Thank you. Does anyone else have anything that they'd like to say to close out our show tonight?
Oh, I did want to mention one more thing, is that I found a couple of really amazing resources, and if there's not time to mention them, you can ask me about them, you know, later. But there is a site called Bloom that I don't know if you know about this one, but it has I just had it out for you, but it has these free courses for hold on a second, there it is, survivors and allies around the world, creating resources to support healing of survivors of gender-based violence. And I really loved the topics, including one, recovering from toxic and abusive relationships. That was a good one. But they are spot on there. And then there was this other really amazing thing that was about using art to heal. And they even send you the art supplies. I was like, yes, okay. So that is also specific to, you have to be in the LGBTQ or HIV impacted survivors from any form of violence. And that's at that's Prism Healing Through Art Restore, and it's registration is open till May 4th. It is via Zoom, and it's weekly for the rest of the year. So it sounds like a really amazing little art-based healing community there.
Thank you. And if people are also looking for other resources, they can also check out the national, let's see. If people are looking for other resources, they can check out the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. There's also the LGBTQ National Help Center. Their national hotline is 1-888-843-4564. There's an anti-violence project that serves specifically people who are LGBTQ, and that's 212-714-1124. And then finally, there's the National Sexual Assault Hotline, 1-800-656-HOPE. And you can also find them online at ohlrain.org/online. So you've been listening tonight to Transpositive. Thank you so much for joining us tonight for this difficult topic. Thank you very much, everyone. Marcy, Nicolette, Carter, Shannon, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. This was an important discussion.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, all.
Hi, this is Emma. Thanks so much for listening to our episode of Transpositive today. KBOO is a radio station that really gives voice to folks who don't necessarily fit into normal corporate radio. And we're a radio station that really tries to open our doors to everyone. So if you really value KBOO, and if you value what you hear on KBOO every day, if you would please consider going to kboo.fm/give and click donate in the mobile app, or text KBOO to 44321. Lastly, you can mail a check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Thanks so much and have a great evening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor Portland Folk Music Society concerts. The series continues on Saturday, May 21st, with a trio of Latina singer-songwriters, Tish Hinojosa, Stephanie Urbina Jones, and Patricia Vaughn, the Texicana Mamas. The Mamas use music and emotion to express their bicultural life experiences and strong pride in their Mexican-American heritage. The Portland Folk Music Series in Southeast Portland continues through June. For information, go to kboo.fm and click on Community Events.